We present Lines from My Grandfather's Forehead, a sequential entertainment for radio, starring Ronnie Barker, also featuring Terence Brady, Pauline Yates and John Graham, with Gordon Langford at the piano.
He seemed to have so much to say into his neighbour's ear that those about him found the play impossible to hear. Perceiving that he must be cowed, a man in front looked grim, and turning round said, "Shush!" so loud that I said, "Shush!" to him. Although I thought I said the word as softly as could be, a lady just behind me heard, and she said, "Shush!" to me. She made a penetrating sound which caused a general stir, and half a dozen men turned round, and they said, "Shush!" to her. The whole house then looked black as death. You should have seen them flush, with anger as they all took breath, together, and said,
"Quiet!"
She's said to be the world's greatest.
The world's greatest what?
Ballerina. She was born in Siberia, you know.
Mm.
Her mother was a farmer, and her father was a Cossack.
Mm.
Or was it the other way round? She's danced all over Russia and all over Europe.
Mm.
She was trained by Roskalova. Started dancing when she was 3, in her pram. Oh, isn't she magnificent? She's dancing like Thistledown tonight. Just like Thistledown.
Mm.
What pathos. Just look at those arm movements. Such restraint. She is the dying swan. And her eyes, deep, fathomless pools of sapphire blue, reflecting the agony, the ecstasy.
You know something?
What?
She puts me in mind of Mrs. Robertson at the co-op.
Gentlemen, you are determined on this duel. Can I not persuade you to forget your differences?
No, sir. This man called me a cad and a swine. I have every right to call him out. He cheats at cards. On top of that, he's a womanizer and has dirty nails.
How dare you, sir?
Very well. If you are determined, you decided on pistols. Here you are. Choose one.
Well, they look exactly the same to me.
They are.
Well, that doesn't make any difference then, does it? I mean, they look absolutely identical.
They are identical.
Well, I'll have this one then. No, wait a minute. No, perhaps that one. I think it's a little bigger, that one. No, perhaps not. Just seems a little heavier, this one.
Sir, they are a matched pair.
Oh, well, you can tell that. Yes, they've got the same little squiggles on the wooden bit, haven't they?
Oh, choose, damn you.
All right. No need to get ratty. It's only a duel. I'll take this one.
Very well. When I drop this handkerchief, yes. I want you to take 10 paces, turn and fire. Is that understood?
Yes.
Very well. 10 paces. Beginning now.
Oh, get away from me. You're meant to walk in the opposite direction, you idiot.
Oh, am I? Oh, I'm awfully sorry. I just thought I'd get as near as possible, will you?
Gentlemen, please.
Yes.
I will drop the handkerchief again.
Right.
Stand back to back. 10 paces.
Where the devil is he?
Yoo-hoo!
Where the devil are you, sir?
Hello!
Come out from behind that tree, sir.
I can see you, but you can't see me.
Come out, sir. Face me like a man.
You might hit me.
Gentlemen, let us start again.
What's the matter? Look, it seems only sensible to take cover, doesn't it?
This is a duel, sir.
That doesn't affect basic self-preservation, does it?
Gentlemen, I will outline the rules once more.
Just a minute. How do I make this thing go bang, bang?
Have you never used a pistol before?
Well, of course I've used a pistol before. Silly question. I've just forgotten, that's all. Forgotten. It's been a long time. I remember you hold it by the curly wooden bit. I think I remember, yes. Oh, it's this little bit at the bottom sticking out, isn't it? You pull it. That's it. Oh, yes, all comes back to me now. You point at the other fellow's head, and then you...
Oh, look out!
You shot him.
Have I? I suppose I must have done in a sort of way, yes. He's fallen over anyway. Does that mean I've won?
It's terrible. It's not in the rules.
Well, look here, you're supposed to be running this thing, old thing. I mean, if you can't keep all... I mean, you're so clumsy, you've dropped your damn handkerchief twice. I think you're just thoroughly incompetent, that's what I think. When it gets out, I don't know what people will think. I reckon they'll laugh you out of the regiment.
you wouldn't tell anyone.
Well, we've got to explain the corpse somehow, haven't we?
Look, I'll tell you what. We'll just fire his pistol and pretend he missed. All right?
Fine.
But you must learn the rules.
I know the rules. This is my 23rd duel, old chap.
"'Twas the day of the gravedigger's wedding. "'The churchyard was shrouded in gloom, "'and the lads of the village sat silent "'as they played tiddlywinks on a tomb. "'The villagers trooped up the high street, "'trying their best not to grieve. "'They were losing their jolly young sexton, "'and alas, there was no reprieve. "'Mr. Coffin, the star undertaker, "'was giving his daughter away, "'and despite his morose occupation, "'was doing his best to look gay. "'He had finished the final arrangements "'and had measured both bridegroom and bride. "'He had ordered the finest brass fittings "'and the hearse in which homeward they'd ride. "'The villagers all were invited, "'invitations sent out to each guest, "'said be in the churchyard at midday, "'and ended no flowers by request. "'The bride wore a gown of black muslin, "'and everyone said she looked grand, "'a veil of black crepe o'er her shoulders, "'and she carried a wreath in her hand. "'The bridegroom had laid down his shovel, "'in order to take up a wife, "'and he whispered aloud to the verger, "'It's the sorriest day of my life.' "'He arrived an hour late for the wedding, "'and the crowd were all getting alarmed. "'He had been in the old Crown and Anchor, "'getting completely embalmed. "'The parson was solemnly waiting, "'the bride and the groom at the rails, "'her train was held up by two pages, "'his pants were held up by two nails. "'When the parson had joined them and blessed them, "'they were sentenced for better or worse, "'and the organ played Rescue the Perishing "'as they hurried away in the hearse. "'The guests followed on to the breakfast, "'the bridesmaids were sent in a cab, "'the feast was laid out in the parlour, "'the best man laid out on a slab. "'The verger had charge of the breakfast, "'the most popular toast that he gave "'was health and long life to the bridegroom, "'may live to dig many a grave. "'And as soon as the breakfast was over, "'and they'd filled themselves full of hot toddy, "'the bride went upstairs and took off her shroud, "'and everyone viewed the body. "'Thank you.'
"'Now, gentlemen, I have called this meeting "'because the shareholders are worried "'that the company is not paying enough attention "'to improving and modernising the production lines. "'Southern Safety Pins Limited is a well-established firm, "'and sales are steady. "'However, there is room for improvement, "'and we have to discuss ways of increasing the shareholders' dividends, "'not to put too fine a point on it.'
"'But surely, Hopkins, if we don't put too fine a point on it, "'the safety pin won't do up.
Yeah.
"'And that's your export trade up the spout.
"'How about making the spout more rounded? "'I'm sure that, by and large, people prefer a rounded spout.'
"'Well, large people would, certainly, yes.' I should have thought it was a question of individual taste.
I disagree. It doesn't matter what things taste like, as long as it says delicious, mouth-watering and fresh on the packet. Mark my words.
That's not a bad idea. Mm. Mark the words in red on every tin. Mm. They'll sell like hot cakes.
Yes,
Well, perhaps we could install ovens in the supermarkets to keep the cakes hot.
Mm.
That would put us streets ahead of our competitors.
I suppose street trading is certainly something to be considered, although our conditions of license would probably put the tin hat on that.
Hardly likely to increase trade, I would have thought. I mean, if I saw a man standing by an oven in the street with a tin hat on, I'd think it was a little queer.
Well, they could wear notices saying, I am not a little queer. And they could push things through the letterboxes, which would appeal to the housewife.
Oh, yes, yes. Letterboxes are certainly worth looking into.
Yeah.
Perhaps as an experiment, we could try it out in certain key places.
Well, the best key place I know is under the mat yes. by the back door.
That's true, yes. Yeah, you know, these keys could open up all sorts of possibilities with the house owners.
And if we did get the owners to open up their houses, the public could be admitted at a nominal fee, and we'd beat our competitors on their own ground.
Well, not only on our own ground, but when we were playing away as well.
Yes.
Of course, we'd need someone to really get the team up to scratch. The question is, who's best?
He's a footballer, Georgie Best.
Well, then he's the very man. Appoint him to the board and get the public to open their houses.
Do you think we can do this? Get the public's houses open?
What's the time?
10 to 12.
Oh, surely, yes, they must be open by now. Come on, I'll buy one. Come on, Green, wake up, the pubs are open. That's it, yes.
We're going to vote Georgie Best onto the board.
Well, that's that, then.
Mm, yes, yeah. Nice to feel we've got something done, isn't it?
Yeah, quite, quite. All you have to do is get round the table and talk about it.
Mm.
People say that love is here to stay forever and a day, but that just ain't the way. Love is a flower, pluck it and it's sure to die by and by, yes. I have heard that love is just a word, a little wingless bird, but I think that's absurd. Love is a boot that kicks you in the stomach when you're down, oh yeah. Oh, love ain't worth a candle. It ain't no door to fairyland. Cause as soon as you grab the door handle, well, it comes right over your hand. Believe me, me and you, our loving days are through. Cause you found someone new, and if that's really true, love is a ticket on a one-way trip right out of my heart. Baba biddy da da do, yeah. Strive. I've had my slice of life. I'll put away the knife and go back to the wife. Love was a fire, but now you're just another old flame. Can't even remember your name. Whoa, yes.
Here.
What?
You know that woman?
What?
You know that woman?
What woman?
You know. The one I was telling you about.
When?
Last week. You remember. When we were looking for that cat.
What cat?
Mrs. Noakes.
Mrs. Noakes?
Mrs. Noakes was her cat. Poor little devil.
Well, what about it?
We was looking for her cat when I was telling you.
Telling me what?
About this woman.
What woman? Mrs. Noakes?
No, no, this other woman.
What other woman?
The one I was telling you about.
Who?
You know, that little woman. Very thick glasses from up north.
No.
Oh, you must have seen her. Her husband's the one with a slight limp. Got a black-handled penknife, you know.
Oh, pesticides.
No, no, that's the other one. Married Mrs. Barclay's eldest girl. Got twins. Bit on the cheeky side.
Don't know him.
Funny you should mention him, though.
Who?
The one whose boy's in pesticides.
Why? I thought you said he's got nothing
to
do with
it. No, no, it's his boys. You know, the twins. That got this woman.
What woman?
This woman. That got this woman into a row with Alderman Parker.
Uh-huh.
You know, that ratepayer business.
Yeah? What ratepayer business?
Ratepayers Association, that business. You know.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she poked her nose in and told Alderman Parker.
Told him what?
What wasn't true.
What wasn't true?
About her, the school janitor.
Well, was it then?
Of course it was.
Oh.
What?
Yes, of course.
What?
It wasn't just the janitor either.
You know who I mean?
Yes, the deputy headmaster was involved as well.
Was he?
I saw him by his car a little while back. She was fixing his spare wheel. He was holding her parrot.
No. Now, that was her sister. She's the one with the parrot. This one's the one with the mongoose, you know.
Mongoose?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. The little one with thick glasses from up north. Her old man's got a black-handled penknife with a bit of a limp.
Yes. That's her.
Well, what about her?
Dead.
Silence, please. Silence. Thank you.
I'd like to call this meeting to order and welcome everyone to the annual, or in other words, 12-monthly conference that we hold once a year for the Society for People Who Use a Lot of Words and Say Very Little. It is with tremendous pleasure, enjoyment, elation, glee, joy and delight, and with very little pain, discomfort, embarrassment, melancholia, and stroke or depression, that I address you all verbally by speaking to all those of you who are listening with your ears to the vocal manifestations which are emanating audibly from this hole in the middle of my face. Now, not wishing to be brief, and in order more fully to beat about the bush, not to mention shilly-shallying and procrastination, although I have in fact just mentioned them, nevertheless, and notwithstanding, I don't propose to sit down without laying before you where I stand in relation to our policy of, or attitude to, and indeed our connection with, the attitude which our policy has always been concerned over.
Oh, excuse me, sir, I've been asked.
What?
If you would,
thank you.
I've just been handed a message, typewritten in a hand I do not recognize, which informs me in no uncertain terms, plainly, even outspokenly, clearly, concisely, briefly, and perhaps it wouldn't be going too far to say rudely, that in the unbiased opinion of the sender of the message, I should bring to an end, terminate, and possibly cease completely my talk, address, conversation, or discourse forthwith, if not immediately. Not, I may add, due to the content of my speech, but merely because, unnoticed by me, when I first rose from my seat, or chairman's chair, to begin this particular address to you, the members of the society, the spectators, audience, not to mention all those present, my trousers fell down. Fancy places that cost the earth.
Do keep your stupid voice down.
These damn fancy places that cost the earth, then you leave it all. I spend all this money buying you damn great meals, and then you leave half of them.
It was all of them a moment ago.
All of them, half of them. What the hell's the difference? You don't enjoy it, that's the point. You're just trying to spend my money. You're just out to break me.
Well, all you do is spend half the day stuffing your face. You do keep your voice down, Alan. That man in the velvet cap is watching us.
Let him watch, I don't care. Let him, if it gives him pleasure. Which is a great deal more than you do anymore, Araminta.
So is the woman with him in the gingham tablecloth. She's watching you as well.
Araminta. Araminta. What a name. It's like being married to something out of a herb garden. Waiter!
Do stop shouting, Alan.
Waiter! Waiter!
Oh, now you're just being childish as usual.
Oh, shut up. I'm really tired of all your titillating treacheries. Tired. Tired of it all.
You should have been an actor, Dennis.
Alan, actually. Alan, your husband.
Alan, Dennis, so what? Your feet smell.
Good evening, sir, madam.
Good evening. My what?
On behalf of the management, may I welcome you to the Whistling Goose? Whoops. Just our little jokes. The menus.
My what?
Your feet.
Perhaps you'd like to see them, sir?
I came here to eat, not to examine your trotters.
That's not what he meant, Dennis.
Alan. Well, if he was referring to my feet, I'm quite well aware of where they are, thank you. Where they've always been, in my socks.
That's just the trouble. You should take them out sometimes. Give them an airing.
We have an excellent menu tonight, sir. Excellent choice. May I recommend the corn on the cob?
No, thank you.
I found a pair of your tennis socks under the driving seat of the car. I don't know what they smelt like.
Stuffed artichokes.
Oh, no, no, no.
Scampi Provençal?
Not really. Something much stronger.
Ah, bad egg camembert fritters.
Bad egg camembert fritters.
Specialité de la maison.
That's it. That's exactly it. Thank you.
One bad egg camembert fritters for the lady. Sir?
No, that's nothing. Nothing of no interest to me.
Why not try something different then, sir?
What you think of my feet? No interest whatsoever. Cannot compare with the horror of what I have to look at each and every breakfast time.
What would you like, sir?
Your face.
Like a peeled prune salad, sir?
Like a peeled prune salad. Yes.
Very nice, too. Yes, you'll like that, sir.
That is your face, exactly.
A peeled prune salad.
Your feet.
And bad egg fritters. Now then, to follow.
To follow? God, I've hardly even begun. I just wouldn't know how to describe living with you. It's like suffocating in...
A plateful of tripe.
Oh, no.
Surprisingly popular around this time of year, madam.
Do you know, I'd forgotten. I'd quite forgotten what sort of character you were, Alan.
A stuffed English pig, perhaps.
A stuffed English pig, thank you.
With an orange in his mouth.
That's it. pig-headed and incoherent.
Traditional, really. Truly British. So, madam, you're...
Insufferable, Araminta. I don't know what else.
May I suggest a haddock soaked in sour milk, sir?
A haddock soaked in sour milk?
Or a nicely addled sheep's brain?
Better, better, with a nicely addled sheep's brain.
No, hardly, sir. No, they don't combine. I can recommend the prime cut of rump.
Thank you. That is it. Now we have it. You are a cow's bottom.
Oh! Oh!
One large rump. Rare? Medium?
Banal.
One stuffed English pig and one prime large cow's rump. Banal.
That's us. That is us all over.
You can say that again.
One stuffed English pig and one prime large cow's rump. Banal. Do you like the banal sprinkled over? It's all rubbed in.
As you please.
Now, to follow...
How can you follow that? How? You've no idea what it's like living with a man such as my husband. He shaves in the bath and leaves his whiskers round the rim.
Have you ever tried semolina au gratin?
Yes, it doesn't shift it.
Or there is tapioca a la Kingston. No, that'd be no good. It's sticking a plug hole. What about a cheese board, sir?
Thank you. Just the word I was looking for. Board.
Thank you, sir.
Board stiff up to here.
And madam?
You make me feel quite sick.
Oh, I do hope not, madam. We do our best.
Oh, shut up.
Sorry, sir.
I'm at my wit's end. I don't know anymore. I don't know at all. It's hopeless.
Yes, well, that is half the trouble with the table d'hote. You see, that is half the trouble. It does limit you. You're very limited, tied down to what's there. Now, if I were you, I'd have a look at the a la carte before I made up my mind.
Would you? And what would you recommend? You obviously know your way about.
What would I recommend? A fine-looking woman like you? Well, now, I'd say, madam, I'd say you could start off with a little reappraisal, follow it with a bit on the side, and then round it all off with a nice helping of reconciliation. Do you much more good than just sticking to the table d'hote.
Yes.
It's very limiting, the table d'hote. You've a very restricted choice. Yeah, and as for your husband, I think I'd recommend a soupçon of roving eye to start with, then some clandestine crumpet, perhaps a couple if he's in the mood, and finish it all off with a trifle apologetic. Never fails, never fails.
God, man, I think you've got something. Araminta?
Why not, Alan? Little adventure once in a while.
Very good. Perhaps you'd like to see the wine list.
Oh, don't bother. Just bring us the finest champagne.
Certainly, sir. Wedding anniversary?
Our 7th, actually. Isn't it, darling?
Yes, very nice too, madam, very nice. Oh, and as for that little itch you've been feeling, sir?
What on earth are you talking about? What itch?
Oh, the one you've been feeling, sir. Trained eye, sir, know all the signs. Give it a good scratch, if you don't mind my saying so, sir. A good scratch. It's much better than the table d'hote.
To be or to be or
not to be.
Nobody.
Not to be.
Not to be. Nobody. Not to be nobody. Yes.
That is the question.
Out of the question. Whether it is
nobler in the mind.
Don't go down the mine, Daddy.
To suffer?
The supper?
The slings and arrows?
The wings of sparrows?
Of outrageous fortune?
And you'll make a fortune.
Or by opposing?
Or just supposing?
End them.
What?
End them. To die, to sleep no more.
Send them today to Ilkley Moor. Bartat.
Oh, God, I'll kill that stupid-looking clown. Oh, it's just hopeless. Bring the curtain down!
Oh, God, I'll kill that stupid-looking clown. Oh, it's just hopeless. Bring the curtain down.
I don't remember that last bit.
In olden Scandinavia, when standards of behaviour were rather lax and income tax was tuppence in the ducat, Denmark's democratic king one day became a static king. He went to rest, became non-est. In fact, he kicked the bucket. He had, it seems, been victimised. The reason for his quick demise developed from a charming trick of Brother Claw, the thug, who, while the king was sleeping sound, came silently a-creeping round and dropped a deadly poison in the royal Danish lug. Then to the queen, a flirty gal, he whispered,
"Listen, Gerty gal, now I'm the king and everything, we might as well be one. So when we've had the funeral, or even rather sooner, just suit me fine. Oh, Gert, be mine."
Gert said,
"It might be fun."
The former king had had a lad called Hamlet, and a sadder lad you never saw, a royal bore, an autocratic dope. In introspective reverie, he'd spend his days forever. He could ask for nothing better than to sit around and mope. One night upon the battlement, or so the tittle-tattle went, a ghost was seen in shades of green, a-frightening the warders. The sergeant, one Sebastian, said,
"Blimey, here's a nasty un. Go fetch a prince, this here's against the current standing orders."
When Hamlet came, the fear he'd had all vanished, as his eerie dad told how he died. Young Hamlet cried, and not without a wince,
"He poisoned up your ear, old dad? Then I'll avenge you, dear old dad." "Thank you kindly,"
cried the phantom.
"Not at all,"
replied the prince.
"I'll sham,"
he said,
"delirium and worrium and wearium. Produce a play, and in this way suspicion I'll dispel."
He went too far. As soon as he decided on this lunacy, the things he did quite soon got rid of half the personnel. While in a boudoir chatting there, he said he heard a rat in there. Ignoring the demeanour of the queen looking on, he shouted,
"For a ducat, dead!"
right through the arras bucketed, and stuck a yard of rapier through his mother's best cretonne. His statement was erroneous. He'd done for poor Polonius, who, embarrassed from the arras, tottered out and sadly said,
"First to make a rat of me, then puncture my anatomy. Call this a lark."
With which remark he hit the carpet. Dead. Polonius a daughter had, who reckoned that she ought to have wed the prince some ages since, but all he did was mock her by saying,
"Dear Ophelia, I really feel you merely are a silly slut."
A cruel cut, which sent her off her rocker. She chanted snatches sundry, sighed, went out into the countryside, and climbed some trees, still chanting glees a little off the key. Alas, an envious sliver there, dropped her into the river there, and quite serene, she last was seen a-heading out to sea. Her brother, name of Laertes, imagined he could slay at ease young Hamlet with a poisoned sword which Uncle Claude had lent him. But Hamlet soon discerned the trick, plugged Laertes and turned the trick, then made a spring right at the king, and rather badly bent him. Meanwhile, a jug of lemonade the king had with some venom made caught Gertie's eye, and feeling dry, she drained the poisoned jug. While Hamlet, still rhetorical, got rather allegorical, some phrases coined, then quietly joined his mother on the rug. And while the bodies dropped around, Horatio, who'd popped around to see the end and superintend, came through the palace doorway, with fort in brass and legions of hairy great Norwegians, who trample in with pomp and din and seize the throne for Norway. The moral of this story, boys, is don't be death or glory, boys. Don't try to rule, or maybe you'll find you are apt to bungle. Don't bother with detection, lads. Just stick to introspection, lads. Be kind, be good. And if you would, try not to stab your uncle. When the curtain goes down at the end of the play, the actors and actresses hurry away. Titania, Bottom, and Quince, being stars, can afford to drive home in their own private cars. Hippolyta, Starveling, and Fluter in luck, they've been offered a lift in a taxi by Puck. And Snug and Lysander and Oberon pop in a bus, and Demetrius clambers on top. With the chorus of fairies, no bus can compete. So they are obliged to trudge home on their feet. It seems rather hard on the poor little things, after flying about all the evening with wings.
You've been listening to Lines from My Grandfather's Forehead, starring Ronnie Barker, with Terence Brady, Pauline Yates, John Graham, and Gordon Langford at the piano. The lines were written by Tony Bilbo and Mike Fentiman, Guy Boas, Terence Brady, David Climie, John Graham, Charles Griffin, Kevin Paul and Harold Arpthorpe, Alan Scott and Chris Bryant, Peter Spence, and Gerald Wiley. The program was produced by John Fawcett Wilson.